Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
WGN 135, Steve Dale here. And we have someone on the phone who's going to make you feel good if you don't. Dr. Sindhu Adderson, Medical Director of Media Care Physician, Northwestern Medicine, with a special interest in obesity. Dr. Adderson, did I say all that right? Whoops. There you are. Did I say all that right?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure to talk to you, and I want to start off with those obesity drugs. By the way, our phone number, 312-981-7200, or you could text that same number, 312-981-7200. Okay, so they're called GLP-1. I'm going to start at the very basic level. Why are they called that?
So they're mainly called GLP-1s in the sense that they pretty much affect these receptors, depending on which drug you're taking. And they attack, they target these receptors, which lead to like appetite suppression, slower gastric emptying, and improvement of insulin secretion. So GLP-1 or there's another one that connects, attacks both receptors, GLP-1 and GIP. Those are the two that we are kind of talking about now and that we see mostly, mainly known as Ozempic or Mounjaro, Zepbound. But yeah,
and I think
mainly it's related to the receptor.
And I think the other thing the drugs all have in common is they have catchy commercials on TV. And people are using them, you'll tell me exactly. But the percent of the population in America, anyway, that use these drugs seems to be growing by the minute. So lots of questions about that. They were originally created, I don't think, exactly for the purpose we're using them today. Can you explain that?
Yeah, they were really primarily initially created for treatment of diabetes, you know, lowering your blood glucose, really trying to manage person's diabetes. And then, you know, through studies and rigorous trials, they have found that it does lead to weight loss and, you know, treatment of other chronic illnesses such as obstructive sleep apnea, fatty liver, and it does reduce risk of cardiovascular incidents as well.
All right. And by so what we know today, though, is they are effective at, and you said it earlier, better than I'm about to, but really turning off a switch in your brain saying turning on a switch in your brain saying I'm no longer hungry anymore. And when you talk to people who take these drugs, or I have, which are a lot of people, they say they do seem to work. Have I described what these drugs do correctly? And is the data what I just said? Do they seem to work as far as weight loss, which also has a lot to do with everything from, you mentioned diabetes, but we could go through a whole list, even incidence of cancer drops, arthritis, osteoarthritis. I mean, all these things that it impacts when you aren't obese or overweight.
Yes, I mean, we do tend to see a significant portion of people really report that they're hearing like less food noise, right? That's what is being like really people are seeing. So it really helps with that appetite suppression for folks. People who tend to snack a lot throughout the day, they're not finding themselves doing that nearly as much. And it really generally does help with that. With the two meds that are out there, semaglutide and tirzepatide, we do see, you know, people tend to stay full longer. They get really good glycemic control. Those who are diabetic, their sugars tend to be really controlled. So those are the big things that we tend to see for folks with these medications, which has been very exciting as a physician.
Diabetes in America, I've talked to some physicians who say, you know, we could call it an epidemic or not, but it could be called that. And that's not to mention all the people that are pre-diabetic. Would you recommend these drugs in general? Of course, you're not making medical decisions here for people, but in general, for people that are pre-diabetic, which are millions and millions of Americans, or even people on the borderline of pre-diabetes.
Yeah, I think that there is a utility for certain patients. for who are considered pre-diabetic, particularly if they're overweight or obese, or even have any obesity-related conditions like high blood pressure, high cholesterol. These medications can be really something that can help you in terms of getting the weight off and getting really good glycemic control. Just generally lowering your blood pressure. With the weight loss, we find folks have lower blood pressure, reducing their overall cardiovascular risk. So there is some utility. I mean, everybody has their own case there, but I do think that there is a lot of opportunity there for folks.
One hindrance of using these drugs is simply the cost. Is that about to change? That's one. I mean, I'm going to ask you two questions at once. And then the other is, they've been, till now anyway, injectable. And there are a lot of people, I'm not going to poke a needle in myself. But now there is going to be another option. Can you address both of those?
Yes. There is talk of new oral medications that should be coming out in the next few months, which has been very exciting. They tend to be as effective as the injectables. In terms of cost, there is a without insurance cost as well as a with insurance cost. It's really dependent on your own insurance plan. These companies do tend to have like cash pay options, which tend to be cheaper, usually rounding around like, you know, $300-$400 a month. And I think the way you have to look at it in terms of worth for you, it's usually like a cup of coffee a day, right? So that if you were to get a Starbucks a day, that's what these medications would cost, particularly on the lowest doses. But we are seeing typically your clinician, your doctor, if your insurance does have some coverage related to these meds, particularly if you meet the criteria, they can usually fill out things called prior authorizations, and they may be able to get these things covered.
Okay, so two questions regarding cost from the text line. One, does Medicare cover the cost?
Some employer Medicare Advantage plans may cover more GLP ones, but I think it's very, it may be dependent on that. I can look into that right now, but it really is dependent on your plan.
Okay, and the second question is about the plan, as you just mentioned. As insurance costs after January 1st for so many people have gone up, let me say that again, gone way up for so many people, mm-hmm. Does this make this drug more difficult to get?
It can. I mean, I think it really, as we're seeing more folks, I would think believe 12% of the population currently uses these meds in some form. As we're seeing more and more people use this and more options of medications that are coming out onto the market, I think we'll see prices go down, which will be very exciting. Medicare does cover these drugs if they are used for type 2 diabetes and certain FDA-approved medical conditions. So they do cover them. They don't necessarily cover them for just obesity, but if you do have any of the chronic illnesses, like obstructive sleep apnea and type 2 diabetes, these drugs may be covered under those conditions.
Which is a good thing. However, I ask this question. You mentioned that it wouldn't be a bad idea, at least for some people, to proactively use these drugs, then they are less likely to be covered, at least by Medicare.
Yes, I think it may be a good opportunity for folks to talk about this with their doctor if they're interested, mainly because, you know, particularly if you get on these meds early enough, you can prevent these chronic issues from even coming up later in life and just generally overall improve your health. So it may be a conversation that people should have with their doctor, because it may overall improve your overall picture, particularly if you have a strong family history of diabetes or heart conditions and things like that, and you happen to be a little bit overweight. These drugs may be a good option for you.
As we're learning about these drugs, there are some advantages, potentially some positive side effects, if we can call it that, of these drugs. I want you to talk about that, but also some adverse reactions, which listeners have asked about via the text line at 312-981-7200. We will ask those questions. Also, I'm curious about the emergency room, which is where you live in part, at Northwestern Medicine. With the change in insurance coverage, are more people likely to visit the emergency room who kind of don't really need to go to the emergency room, but they feel they need to because that's the only way they could afford to get medical care? So I'll ask you about all of that and the flu shots and COVID vaccines. We have a lot to do when we come back on WGN. Dr. Sindhu Adderson, Medical Director and Media Care Physician, Northwestern Medicine, with a special interest in a part of what we're talking about right now, overweight and obesity, which much of America is, and the GLP-1 drugs that you've seen those catchy commercials for over and over on television. Dr. Adderson, are there advantages of taking these drugs, for example, over time? May they help with, aside from the other medical problems that we spoke about, long-term effects of these, or don't we know yet?
Yeah, I mean, these drugs have been on the market, some form and the other, for the last several years. I mean, the main positive effects that we're seeing is, like, you know, really improved glycemic control, where you have a decreased fasting and, you know, after meal blood sugars, really decreasing your cardiovascular risk in those who have type 2 diabetes, lowering blood pressure. Also, what we're also seeing is, like, you know, reduce appetite and cravings, improve food noise, and just reduce inflammation markers and possible renal protection, where it's like really protecting your kidneys as well. And people, women who may have PCOS, like polycystic ovarian syndrome, those metabolic parameters can be improved as well. And, you know, decreasing that, lowering the obstructive sleep apnea of a severity. Those are all, these things are the benefits of these medications, which can be very helpful for people.
Did you say food noise? Does that mean like my stomach won't growl anymore?
The stomach may still growl, but you generally won't feel the desire to continue snacking or snacking out of boredom, or, you know, just the general food noise that some people tend to, you know, describe. These drugs tend to quiet that noise. And so people tend to, you know, decrease the amount of, you know, snacking and things like that. We've also noticed that, you know, decreased amount of like alcohol use, because you really don't feel a desire to drink alcohol as much when you're on these meds either.
Well, these meds don't sound very fun. Now, I have a couple of questions here that are about the opposite end of it. If I'm understanding correct, and I'll read this to you the best I can, we have known, this is from the Texter 217 area code, we have known several people on these GLP drugs to get pancreatic cancer. Is there a higher incidence of some cancers?
We have not seen that. That's not been clinically proven. That may be more anecdotal evidence. We've seen people who can have a higher risk of getting pancreatitis, which is inflammation of the pancreas, but that tends to, even pancreatitis doesn't necessarily lead to a higher risk of pancreatic cancer.
I have a question, it says, for the doctor, that you, regarding the GLP-1 medications. Is there any data regarding the receptor sites becoming worn down and the medication no longer being effective over time?
Oh, I have not read or seen anything related to that.
Interesting. I think that's an interesting question, though.
That is a very interesting question. And I think those are things that will be studied with time, as, you know, these meds are on the market and, you know, people are taking them for years and years and years. Those are things that we're going to see and then anecdotally, you know, study with folks, as there's been robust studies that these companies are doing to really assess these drugs and make sure that they're safe and effective for the general population. So
all right. Yep.
I'm hopeful we'll get some more information.
Yes, yes, yes. Overall, is it safe to say, and then I want to talk about the flu and COVID and some other things. Overall, is it safe to say the general impression that I get from you is these drugs do a lot of good, and that you're enthused about their impact?
Yes, I have seen some really great results for patients who have been on these medications. I think the best way to kind of approach them is to go at it slowly and just slowly increase the dose as tolerated. You don't want to go too fast because that's when these side effects and things like that can happen. So, but I am enthused and I'm really hopeful for people in our patient population that we can really, you know, see some big changes there.
What are the side effects that you are talking about?
Some side effects, the most common side effects we tend to see are things like constipation, nausea, and vomiting are really common. We tell people, you know, that those things happen because of the medication. If people are eating bigger meals than their body's telling them to. So we encourage people to eat small, frequent meals. Stop eating when you start feeling full. And, you know, hold off on increasing your doses until you really are tolerating the medication. So it's okay to go slow on these meds. That would lead you to have the most success.
Oh my gosh, I've got a million texts here. So let me get to a couple. one of them, and I really want to somehow find a way to talk about the vaccines, but what about microdosing? That's a big thing now for a lot of drugs, including the GLP-1s.
Yeah. So I think in doing the microdosing, just being, you want to be on the lowest dose that gives you the most, that gives you the effect that you want, right? So you want to, you don't want to, if that is that for tirzepatide 2.5 milligrams and just being on that for months and years, that's okay. And because you're at your goal weight and you want to maintain that goal weight, that's totally fine. People say the therapeutic dose is 5 milligrams, but no need to go on the 5 milligrams if you are tolerating that low dose and feeling great and, you know, you're maintaining the weight that you want and getting this and not having minimal side effects.
Another is my daughter has been on a GLP-1 for months and now has acne. So have you seen this before and what do they do about it?
I've not necessarily seen that so much as seen that much. But main thing we would tell folks, I mean, it depends on the age of the daughter and if there's any other things that could be causing it. I've not seen any, you know, really relationship between acne and GLP-1. So
Clarisil? Do they even still make that? I don't know.
They may.
I don't know. I'm 75 years old. Not me. This is the text. I've been on GLP-1s for 13 months. I've lost only 20 pounds. 20 sounds significant to me. But anyway, I've noticed a big difference in my arthritic knees, and my doctor's happy about that. I've paid up to $500 a month, though. Regular Medicare. Oh, let me see if I can read the rest. Does not cover, is what she says. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think right in the current state, Medicare may not cover under the diagnosis of obesity, but they may cover under other things such as sleep apnea or cardiovascular risk reduction or type 2 diabetes. So that may be something to discuss with your doctor. There may be other indications where these drugs can get improved.
Demonstrating how smart our listeners are once again. Great question you're about to hear. Are GLPs a lifetime commitment?
Yeah. We should anticipate having to take it for your entire lifetime.
Are GLP-1s safe for people without a gallbladder?
It would be dependent on the case. I would probably recommend following that up or discussing with your doctor.
All right, let's get on to the flu vaccine. Is it too late to get that flu vaccine? And flu, by the way, in some places in America, the incidence of flu is really, really high, including the Chicago area.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it is not too late to get the flu vaccine. I would encourage people to get it if they have not gotten it yet. Because I think it can prevent the severe progression of flu.
Even at this late date, we should get the vaccine if you haven't, is what you're saying?
Yes, we would, because flu is very high currently in the community right now.
It is. What about COVID? Is it worth getting at this point in time that vaccine, I say it the way I said it because some would say that, well, having COVID now for a lot of people anyways, like having the common cold.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing as a vaccine has mutated over the last several years, we are seeing it become less and less severe, particularly if you've had the vaccine, have gotten boosters in the past. People tend to do well if they do tend to be positive. The people who should get vaccinated or get these updated boosters are really like high priority groups, those who are immunocompromised, adults ages 65 and older, anyone with any chronic underlying conditions. We would encourage those folks getting vaccinated the COVID booster.
So, and are you seeing a fair amount of COVID at this point? And how virulent is COVID-19 now? Are people getting very, very sick?
We are seeing a bit of an uptick week by week related to COVID. Not nearly as much as we are seeing of the flu. So we are seeing a slight uptick related to COVID infection, but we're not seeing people tend to have these high fevers or shortness of breath or really severe symptoms related to COVID, which we are seeing people have these high fevers and getting really sick with the flu, though.
And one more very quick question. The medication for COVID, Paxlovid, I have been told is not as relevant anymore because COVID has mutated. Is that true?
That I don't necessarily believe. Anecdotally, I've seen patients who have had gotten Paxlovid when they have COVID, and their symptoms tend to resolve or improve significantly. The idea with Paxlovid is it is an antiviral you take to prevent that severe progression to COVID. But the number one line of defense is the vaccine. So we still encourage folks, if you've never gotten a COVID vaccine, we would encourage you to get that. But these vaccines and boosters, that's your number one line of defense. There.
All right. We've got to keep the Chicago Bears healthy, so I need to cut you short here.
Oh, definitely.
Yes, Dr. Sidhu Addison, thank you so much.